Hi everyone, we are here. I am very happy, you know, and very excited because we have a special guest today in the episode of today, Coronado Leadership with Dr. Tim Elmer. Very happy because we are going to discuss so great topics. So first of all, welcome Dr. Tim Elmer to this.
Thank you, Marcos. It's episode. A pleasure to be with you. We're going to have some fun.
Thank you very much. You know, I'm so happy. Thank you for your generosity of time, energy, you know, for being here. And we're going to be talking about a very great topic. But before that, I just want to introduce you a little bit about who is Tim Elmer. Dr. Tim Elmer, he is a leadership expert. He's a bestseller author and something very interesting. And he's a very special man, a friend. And someone that has been mentoring me, you know, for a while. So I'm very happy, you know, that we are here, you know, to share and to have this conversation with all of you. And one of the most recent books, a greeting by Dr. Tim Elmer, is this one, is A New Kind of Diversity. And by the way, I recommend you know, this book so much because it's about the topic that we're going to discuss today. And it's about how to lead multiple generations. So first of all, Dr. Tim Elmer, what inspired you, you know, to write this book? Why this topic?
Yeah. Well, the reason is because as I got around to different universities, businesses, nonprofit organizations, I kept seeing the same challenge. There was some young 22-year-old joining the team, but then you had someone in their 30s, someone in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And we all came from different time periods, different age groups. And we grew up and were formed in different times. So sometimes the communication style was fundamentally different. Sometimes the way we viewed things were different. Sometimes our values were different. And very often we were colliding instead of collaborating with each other. I keep encouraging people when I see this, you need to stop getting furious and start getting curious with each other.
Yes.
But anyway, I kept seeing the same issue. And by the way, Marcos, I've been studying this now for, gosh, over 30 years.
Wow.
And I just decided I've got to create a tool that helps people, kind of like an encyclopedia, understand those people that are in 20s and then their 40s and then their 60s. And to realize we were all shaped in different times and we have different value to add to the team because of that. So we should do way more than tolerate each other. We should leverage the strengths of each other. That's the goal of the book.
Wow, I love that, you know, how to really recognize that kind of strengths and,
and
differences and start building on that difference. So I love that. And I love the title, you know, it's very magnetic, you know, very attractive, you know, because currently, you know, we are listening, you know, so many kind of diversities, you know.
Yes.
But this one is something that is not something that we are being so intentional about it, you know, in the organizations, even in our families or companies, businesses or faith communities, you know.
So it's true.
And talking about this, why it matters, you know, to the generational diversity, why it matters and why it's so important to understand that diversity and to close that gap among generations.
Yeah, I'll tell a story. I love the story of Tony. Tony Pellicino was a university student a few years ago. And in his final year at the university, he decided to get a part-time job. And it was at a paint store. Also that year, Tony got on TikTok and began to post videos.
Yes.
Well, he would post videos of himself doing something very creative at the paint store after his working hours. And as he posted them, his TikTok account went viral. In fact, within about 6 or 7 months, Tony had about 1.7 million followers and 34 million views. And it was at that point he thought, oh my gosh, this is powerful. We could monetize this. We could use this for marketing to another million and a half customers. So Tony decided he would ask for a meeting with the leaders of this paint store. He put a slide deck together to make a presentation, and he asked the executives to meet. But Tony did not get one single leader who was willing to meet with him. He did not get one set of eyes to look at his slide deck. Instead, Tony got something he did not expect. He got fired.
Wow.
They let him go. Yeah. So they thought that he was stealing the paint, or he was probably doing this on his working hours, or he was probably distracting to the customers. But they came up with excuses that they had to let him go. So get this. Tony graduates from the university, moves from Ohio, where his school was, all the way down to Florida. I just looked. Tony now has 2.1 million followers, and he has started his own paint store.
Wow.
So while there may be many things we don't understand about this story, I know one thing for sure. That paint store missed a wonderful opportunity to reach more people, and they turned it down because they did not think like Tony thought.
Yes.
Does Tony have a lot of room to grow? Of course he does. But boy, I think we're not willing to listen to some of those young people that have great ideas that are different than our ideas. And we're just building a wall instead of a bridge to those generations. So, and by the way, it goes both ways. Sometimes young people are not listening to older generations, you know, and they're not ready for their careers when they graduate from the university. So I decided I have to create a tool. So here's an analogy I want to give you.
Yes.
Marcos, you live in Mexico. I live in the United States.
Yes.
If you and I were to get on an airplane and fly around the world, let's say we flew to China, okay?
Yes.
As we exited the airplane, we would both be really prepared to work hard to connect with people in China.
Yes.
Why? Because they speak a different language. They have different values. They have different customs.
Yes.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying about Generation Z or the boomers or the millennials.
Yes.
If we're willing to do the work in China to connect with somebody, we need to be willing to do the work right here at home with someone who may feel like they're from another country, but they're just from another generation. So that's my encouragement to every listener right now.
Wow, that's powerful, you know, because how many opportunities we can miss, you know, if we are not open to listen and to understand, you know, to other people, other people from different generations with different perspectives.
Yeah.
And that requires a lot, you know.
It does. It really does.
Humility, yeah. I think, and respect, and I don't know.
This is
powerful. And not just an example, it was an example in a business, but that can happen in every context.
Yeah, you know, really can.
In family or
yeah,
I don't know, in the place we work or
it's true.
Universities, or I don't know, whatever, you know.
Yeah. So let me give you an analogy that's really helped me. I am 65 years old, so I'm retirement age. I don't plan to retire, but I'm like a father or a grandfather to many of these.
not retiring, but refiring.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
That's the attitude.
So when I read a good book, I often highlight with different highlighting colors.
Yes.
Yellow means an important statement. Blue means story. This is a good story. Green means this is data. Here's a statistic that's important. You know, all kinds. I use 5 different colors.
Yes.
So the reason I do that is because then I can easily see the value of the book later. Oh, that's a good story. I could see it because it was the right color. That's a piece of data. I can see it because it's the right color. I get value out of each color. I believe at our schools and at our workplaces, all 4 or 5 of those generations that are there represent different highlighters. And they see something that we don't see, the others. So we need to look for what the millennials tell us. We need to look for what the Gen Zers tell us. I don't see it, but I have another color that I help you see. So I'm telling you, it's like we're writing a story. Your university is writing a story.
Yes. There are
4 or 5 generations helping to tell that story. And we need every bit of color to highlight the different parts of the story so we don't miss any part that might be valuable in the end.
That's a great perspective, you know?
Yeah.
In order to recognize, you know, all the minds and talents, you know, that surround us. So that's amazing. And now that you're talking about the different generations, you were talking about Gen Zs, millennials. Yeah. So let's talk about what are those generations we're talking about that we are supposed to connect, to build bridges, you know?
Yes.
And to lead, why not? And so can you just talk about what are those five active generations, you know, in leadership today, and what are their values, strengths, characteristics, or some weaknesses too?
Okay. So the oldest generation that might still be on a university campus or maybe in a workplace are older than retirement age. They would be born between 1929 and 1945. So then they might be 80 years old or 83 years old. Right. But because people are living longer these days and working longer these days, they might still be on the campus or at the workplace. They were called the builder generation because they built so much out of so little. Think about it. They're very old. At least in our country, they grew up during the Great Depression. It was an economic depression. They grew up during World War II, which the United States participated in for a few years. So very challenging time. They bring resilience, resourcefulness, loyalty. They're very loyal. They bring a gratitude. They're almost always grateful for little things because they didn't have much when they were growing up, and
it's
how they were shaped. That's how they were shaped. By the way, I like to say it this way. People develop a little bit like wet cement. So if you're walking along the sidewalk and you see a fresh patch of cement that's just been poured, it's wet, right? In fact, you can put your handprint in it because it's so soft. If you try to put your hand in it a year later, you can't do it. It's too hard. Okay. Yes, exactly. So our brains are filled with neurotransmitters. There are neural pathways in our brains. They're very pliable in the first 20 to 25 years. The plasticity is very high. That's why young children can learn multiple languages very quickly when they're 5 years old, like your daughter's age, because
they can absorb it so quickly. Yeah.
That's right.
Learn,
Once you get to be my age, you're not learning very many new languages at my age. Can I say that?
Yes.
So it's just important to know that we are shaped in their early years. And those builder generation people were shaped at a time where there weren't many resources. And they were grateful and they were frugal. They were conservative. And I love those virtues. We need those virtues to come back. Even though they're very old, we need to welcome whatever they have to offer to our generation and our children's generation, okay?
Yes.
The next younger generation, they're still older, is mine. They're called the baby boomers.
And
they're
called
boomers because there was a boom of babies all around the world after World War II was over. Yes. So the years of their birth were 1946, the year after the war ended, to 1964. And there was a boom, at least in my country, Marcos, there were 76.4 million people that were born. I know Mexico might have been different, but after World War II, there was a sense of let's start over. You know,
let's begin. It was pretty the same, you know, the families started, you know, growing so fast, you know, and having so much, you know, children.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lots of children were born to that generation. So, boomers were called boomers because there was a boom of babies. All right. The next generation was often called, excuse me.
Yeah, don't worry.
We'll have to cut that from the recording.
Yes. Right here.
So the next generation is often called Generation X or the Baby Busters. But Generation X is a generation that's very unique. They were born between 1965 and about 1980, 81, 82. So the title that stuck with this generation was Generation X, because about 35 years ago, many Gen Xers were interviewed by the media and they were asked, what do you want to be called as a generation? And they said, we don't want to be called anything. Call us the X generation. So that's what stuck, the X generation. But the very first title they were given in America, in the US, was Baby Buster. And the reason for that is their generation started right when the birth control pill began. So there was a contraceptive, there was a fertility pill that reduced the number of babies that were being born. Right or wrong, yes, there was a reduction in the birth rate.
Yes.
So the boomers was a boom and the busters was a bust. It was a much smaller fertility rate. Okay, yes. The next one we've been talking about for many, many years. I think it might even be your generation.
Yes.
Millennials, okay?
Millennials.
So millennials are often called Generation Y, following Generation X. But millennials are called millennials because they will spend their entire adult life in the new millennium, the 21st century, not the 20th century. So what year were you born, Marcos? Tell me.
I was born in 1985. Yeah.
Yep. So you were an earlier millennial.
Yeah, early millennial.
And the millennial generation is so, well, first of all, in our country, it's very large. Would it be a large generation?
Yes, it's a large generation here too in Mexico.
Interesting. So there's so much they have to offer. They have hope and confidence and energy. Every time you and I meet, I love your confidence and your energy. You're full yes. of it. Mainly, well, one, there's a lot of reasons for it. Your yes. faith and the work that you do with the next generation. But I think part of it is you're part of a very confident and energetic generation of young professionals. I love the millennial generation because my two children are both part of that generation. They're both in their 30s and they are more confident with technology than my generation was.
Because we live that transition. It's like,
yes.
Analogous exactly. to digital, you know? So it was very interesting that too.
Yeah. In fact, think about it. As the millennials grew up, the cell phone grew up.
Yes.
As millennials grew up, the computer grew up. So you were the one, like you said, introducing or getting introduced to you the new technology, and you were young enough to pick it up and use it well. So a very large generation. Okay, after the millennials or Generation Y comes Generation Z, and those are the university students that are on your campus. They're also young professionals entering the workforce, yes. and they would even go down to teenagers these days. So they're often very misunderstood because an older generation looks at them and goes, oh my gosh, you guys are weird. You're strange. You know, I don't understand you. But think about it for just a minute. The millennials grew up with a cell phone. Gen Z grows up with a smartphone. Millennials grew up with, this computer, but Gen Z is growing up with AI.
Yes.
Wow. Oh my gosh, it's just a game changer.
Yes.
I'm sure at your university, professors are probably going, did you write this paper or did ChatGPT write this paper? You know, it's yes. true. Yes. So anyway, all that to say, we need to welcome this new generation and not get frustrated, but get fascinated with them because they represent the future. Yes. Like it or not, they are the future. And Marcos, I have a theory I want to share with your listeners right now.
Yes.
I'm putting it in a brand new book that's going to come out this fall.
Awesome.
It's called The Future Begins with Z.
Wow.
9 strategies to lead Generation Z as they upset the workplace.
Oh my God.
They're going to upset it. They are.
Yes.
So here's what I see coming in the future. The age of authority is going down. Kids are coming in so smart with technology, with an intuition on where the future is going, with knowing what customers are going to do. They know how to monetize TikTok. Look at Tony, okay? Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't worry.
So the authority doesn't come from a title yet. They might just be 22 or 23 years old. But they're coming in with an intuition and an insight into technology that my generation may not have. That can be frustrating to someone that's in their 50s or 60s. However, the age of authority is going down, but often the age of maturity is going up. they might exhibit social and emotional maturation that's not as far along as past generations like yours or mine, who are already in the workforce and we've been there for 15 to 20 to 30 years. So you can see how that would be frustrating. They're so smart, and yet they might not be emotionally mature enough to have a good conversation. They're more used to looking at a screen.
Yes.
So sorry.
No, don't worry.
More water. Gracias, agua.
Yes.
All right. So where did I leave off?
Yeah, you were talking about the age to mature, you know, is going up.
Yeah. So their maturity level or their emotional intelligence may not be as high as their intelligence. Their EQ may not be as high as their IQ. And I believe it's going to be the job of both universities and workplaces to really teach not just academics, but teach emotional intelligence. How do we interact with people face to face? How do we work as a team member and get the most out of each other? How do we support and encourage each other? Those are all fundamentals that you and I learned way back a long time ago, but Gen Z has gotten so comfortable with a screen, it might be difficult. Anyway, I'll stop there.
Yeah, it's very interesting that, because it's happening. It's something that we observe, you know, we are dealing with this generation. I can tell you, you know, for example, university, it's really lacking, you know, that kind of skills, you know, social intelligence, emotional intelligence, you know, to really connect, you know, and to build relationships. They are very, they can do it and very used to do it, you know, through technology and screens, but not face to face, you know.
Even
sometimes to just making a call, you know?
Yes, yeah.
You know, they prefer to a WhatsApp message or message or in social media or whatever.
Yeah.
But because sometimes, you know, that call produces anxiety, you know? And they are worried, you know, about the call, you know? So that's kind of weird, you know?
Yeah.
But it's the thing that we are dealing.
It's so true. And it's true all over the world.
Yes.
I've spoken about this topic, generational diversity, in a dozen different countries, some in South America, North America, Europe, Asia, and they're facing the same challenges. So you're absolutely right. In the new book that's coming out, I talk about how the fact that Generation Z might be protesting on the streets for some cause and yet be afraid to call their doctor to make an appointment. You know, it's just, what is going on here? So I need to tell you an interesting story. A hiring manager was interviewing a 22-year-old young man for a job, and he was very smart. And so she asked the young man, tell me about a story from your life where you faced a big challenge, but you were proud of yourself for how you handled it. So the young man waited for a moment and then told her a story, and she was very pleased. She thought, oh my gosh, this is great. So she made a decision a day later, I want to hire this young man. But when the HR person called this young man and said, we'd like to hire you, he responded by saying, are you kidding me? There's no way I would work for that woman. She triggered my PTSD when she asked me to talk about my hard time in my life.
Oh my.
And I'm thinking, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So again, someone like me that's my age or maybe in their 50s or whatever might go, what are you talking about? I just asked you to tell a story.
Yes.
There is mental health challenges, as you well know, that exist in Gen Z.
Yes.
It might not exist in someone who's 55 or 65 years old. And so we often don't understand or empathize with what they're going through. I could be angry with that young man in the interview rather than saying, wait a minute. There must be something going on. I want to understand. So I always tell leaders that are experienced, let's start with empathy and build the resilience. But start with empathy to get to the resilience. Yeah.
I love that, you know, how important it is to really be empathetic, you know, with every generation. But right now, you know, with the youngest generations, it's so important, you know, to connect. a different, in a deeper level, you know, with them and to listen to them.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
For sure.
To help it. Yeah. I love that. But what kind of challenges do you see, you know, leading all these generations?
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I know that you are the CEO and founder of Growing Leaders, you know, and you really, you work with multiple, you know, generations and actually, you know, you go with different companies worldwide in the USA, you know, to talk about this topic. So, but what are those kind of challenges, you know, that you see and yeah. how to really address this kind of challenges?
Yeah, good question. Well, those challenges will take place, like you said, both at our workplace and at our homes.
Okay.
So I know parents that are frustrated with their teenager, perhaps because they don't understand her vocabulary or her habits or whatever. So the parent might understand that she has an Instagram account, but that they have no idea she has 5 Finsta accounts, fake Instagram.
Yes.
Or she's developed personas for herself and she's interacting with people she doesn't even know online.
Wow.
And of course that can scare a mom or a mother or father. So, and of course there's the professor in the classroom that's got students that seem like they don't even have the same values or speak the same language. But here's where I see it most. The younger generation can come in with not only a lot of inexperience, but they can come in with a little bit of arrogance. Mm-hmm. At least it feels like arrogance. It may be confidence on their part. I know an attorney who is in California who said he just interviewed a young college graduate. And in the interview, in 15 minutes into the interview, this young lady said to him, "I'm going to have your job in 18 months.
Wow.
Now, she thought it was coming across like confidence. He thought it came across like arrogance. So he never hired her. But here's what we're going to need to face. They're so confident at their insight into technology. One out of 8 Gen Zers has monetized TikTok. They're making money. And of those 1 out of 8, 1 out of 5 of those, it's a full-time job. They're making 6-digit income off of an app on their phone. Yes. I don't know how to do that, you know? So I guess what I'm saying, I think what we need to do is enter reverse mentoring relationships.
Yes.
And you and I've talked about this, Marcos, but if you don't mind, I want to tell the listeners right
now. Yeah, go ahead. That could be great, you know, if you can.
So I have some young men and women on our team that are way younger than me. I love meeting with Andrew, who's 30 years younger than me.
Yes.
I love meeting with Cam, who's 40 years younger than me.
Yes.
And whenever we meet, we swap stories because you always find common ground in swapping stories. You know, what you like, what you love to eat, what you love, what sports you love. So we swap stories, but then we each take turns mentoring the other. Wow. I will pour into Andrew and Cam insights I picked up over 45 years of my career, but I'm then going to put on the student hat or the mentee hat and let them mentor me and maybe how we can use the latest app they just got on their iPhone for our organization. But if I have humility and respect and curiosity, those are the big 3 traits that every generation is looking for.
Yes.
Humility, be ready to learn. Respect me from the beginning. Don't make me earn it. And curiosity, be hungry for what I might bring to the table.
Yes.
I'm telling you, this has been so good for our organization and it's fostered good relationships and, oh my gosh, just growth for our organization. Now, one more quick story.
Yes.
I also believe one of the challenges takes place with our own families. So my daughter, Bethany, is just a little bit younger than you, Marcos. She is 36 years old. She'll be 37 this year. And we are wired very differently, okay? I love her so much, but we're just different personalities. And so when I want to be the mentor all the time because she needs to learn all my insights, you know, along the way.
Yes, yes.
She doesn't like that. And so last Christmas, we were together as a family and we had a very difficult conversation. She was mad, I was mad, and we were still fine. We still hugged each other goodbye, but we were both angry. Fast forward a few weeks, I remember I was laying in bed one night and I was just thinking, and I started thinking about my own father and my older sister. When my father died, my sister did not like him. She did not even want to stand up at the memorial service and say anything. She was so angry with him. And they were experiencing the same thing that Bethany, my daughter, and I were beginning to experience in our lives.
Yeah.
And so as I laid there in bed, I thought, oh my gosh, I don't want that to happen to us. So I called my daughter up and I said, Bethany, could I ask you a question? She goes, sure. I said, could we get on the phone every month and just talk for a while? And my one goal on that phone call will be to listen.
Yeah.
And she said, what? Because she didn't think I was. And I said, my one goal will be to listen. I know I have so much to learn from you. And you know me as your father, who's an author of 40 books. And so I'm always trying to teach her something or whatever. And I realized I just need to stop and listen. Well, Marcos, it has been so rich because we're getting time on the phone where I'm learning from her and I'm asking her questions and I'm listening. And you know what I noticed as I was willing to listen? About halfway through the call, she starts asking me questions, which she usually doesn't do because I'm teaching all the time. She doesn't have to ask me questions. But I'm telling you, I think if we'll build a bridge instead of a wall at the workplace, at the university, and in our own families, we're going to see rich fruit coming, rich results coming, because we just were stopping to listen to each other rather than tell each other what we know. And that's what I'm hoping happens wherever we go.
Wow, thank you for sharing, you know, this powerful, you know, and deep story, you know. Very personal. Thank you. And how important you said so many like key aspects, you know, and everything that you were sharing, you know, about listening, you know.
Yeah.
There is power in listening and how you were sharing about how important it is in family, you know, to in practice, you know, and pay attention to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important.
Can I share something real quick?
Yeah.
The number one aspiration or desire of Generation Z in nationwide surveys is to be heard. I want to be heard. I want to have a voice.
Yes.
The first day that I show up on the campus or the first day I show up at the workplace. Well, older people go, you're not going to have a voice for another year because, you know, you got to learn, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm saying, oh my gosh, if we would start with belief and we would start with, I want you to feel like you've got a voice. Listen to this statement. A psychologist by the name of David Augsburger once said this: being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, it's indistinguishable. I'll say it again. Being heard is so close to feeling loved that for the average person, they can't even tell the difference. So when you listen to your little five-year-old daughter and your dad who knows everything, and she's five, but you're listening to her, oh my gosh, what an expression of love. When you're listening to those students on your campus, not just teaching, but listening, and they're going, oh my gosh, my teacher is listening to me. Think what that does. It builds a bridge.
Yes.
And then you've earned your right to be listened to yourself because you listen. So anyway, I'll stop preaching, but I just, that's the way of tomorrow. It is.
But that's powerful. That's powerful. It's something that I will say that, that leadership starts in home, you know?
Yeah.
Because the first role models that we have is our parents.
Yeah.
That's the place where we really learn, you know, to treat others, you know, and other people, to listen to them, to embrace them, to respect people, and to behave and to connect, you know, socially, whatever. Yes. Yeah. How important is that? And also, if you have siblings, you know, brothers, you know, sisters, yeah, it's another way to how yep. to connect and to it's lead so and to influence. And I would say that leadership starts there. Yeah. But sometimes, you know, that family can be, let's say, functional and it can have like the right and the proper, you know, environment, you know, to thrive and to succeed and to develop, you know, like they say in the best way, you know, as we grow, you know, in life. But many people, they don't have that, you know. So
it's so true.
How to help them? I always say that in the stage, you know, that we find those people, we have to support them, to listen to them. So what do you think about this? You know, like if they are in university, if they are in the workplace, if they are, I don't know, if they are neighbors, but how to do it? How can we be more supportive, more empathetic, and a better listeners?
Yeah, I have two thoughts. The first one is a piece of history. It's a story. There was an anthropologist in the U.S. By the name of Margaret Mead. She's quite famous. She passed away years ago. But way back 50 years ago, she made an observation about where the future was going. Now, keep in mind, this was 50 years ago. I think we're experiencing what she said today. She said human history can be divided up into three stages or three eras. The first one is what she called a post-figurative era. The title's not important, but here's what it was. Thousands of years ago, as a child grew up back then, they learned everything post or after the adults, right? In fact, it was always the adults that were teaching the young.
Yes.
Way back in those days, you learned the values, the customs, the traditions of your culture through your mother and father and through the teachers in your life. It was always older to younger, right?
Yes.
In fact, as you grew up, if you were a boy, you ended up doing what your father did as a job. If you're a girl, you ended up doing what your mother did, you know, make meals and clean the house. It was just perpetuating the traditions over and over and over again. With the introduction of the Enlightenment and the Industrial Revolution, we moved into what Margaret Mead called a co-figurative era. Now, because books were available and reason became the reason for doing things, reason became king. Now young and old were learning together. We could read books and rationalize and reason together. In fact, our nation, the United States, was born during this period. We said in our early pages of our Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident. You know, this is evident, it's reasonable.
Yes.
So now, if you're growing up then, you might have a say in who your spouse would be. You might have a say in what your job and career might be. Okay, reason. Yeah. You are learning with the adult. Margaret Mead made a prediction, Marcos, that as we moved into the 21st century, we would move into what she called a prefigurative society, which meant because technology is being introduced so fast and artificial intelligence, even back then we were talking about it, it's now being introduced so quickly. The young may be the teachers of the old. They may be understanding things more quickly than even we are. And that's so scary to an older person like me. I was the teacher. What happened here? You know, it's true.
I have all the answers.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about your kids. They're young right now, but as they grow up, you may be in 15 years going, sweetheart, I need to be listening to you. You understand this portable device better than I do, you know? And so I guess I'm saying we're moving into the world where we need to be teaching and listening all the time. I will need to coach more than I used to coach, and I'll need to listen more than I used to listen as we move into the future.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for mentioning, you know, this a little bit of history, you know, in order to understand the times that we are living Yeah. That's the stage of life that we are into it, right?
Yeah.
And we have been talking, you know, about generations, about this new kind of diversity, challenges, you know, opportunities, you know, to lead, you know.
Yeah.
Importance and the power of listening too. And then how to become a bridge, you know? You were mentioning yet that, you know, how to become that bridge. Yeah, listening is important, be respectful.
Yeah.
But how really to do it, you know? Because sometimes many people, sometimes I listen, you know, in different contexts, maybe symposiums or general meetings, you know, sometimes in the, even in the United Nations, for example, and they talk about, let's build bridges. And it's important.
Yeah.
And not to build walls, you know,
divided,
you know, but that sounds, you know, in the speech so well, but let's say in the practical way, you know, like with the students, with our families, with our neighbors, that because sometimes every person is a world, you know.
Yes,
in itself, it's a world, and they have different perspectives, different beliefs, different ways of behave, habits, and sometimes they are very hard, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
But how to navigate that kind of things and relationships, you know?
Yeah.
Really understand, to be that kind of bridge, you know, among all these people in different generations.
Yeah, well, you just used the word understand. I think that's where it begins. I have another analogy.
Yeah.
So in our family at Christmas time, we do a gift exchange like many, many families do around the world.
Yes.
But in our family, because we're a larger family, we choose names. So we pick names out of a hat. You understand. So I might get Uncle Charlie, or someone got, you know, my daughter Bethany, or someone gets this or whatever. So the first year we did this, you know, everybody picked another person's name and everybody had someone pick their name.
Yes.
Well, very rapidly we discerned who was really good at gift giving and who was not so good at gift giving. So my wife is a wonderful gift giver at Christmas. You want her to get your name because she understands what you like. She'll spend a little bit extra money on you and it'll be exactly what you wanted for Christmas. Yes. My son, he's not a good gift giver, okay? He goes out late the night before Christmas and he finds something cheap and, you know, it's not a great gift. Here's my point. I think good leadership feels like a good gift giver. I understand the person I'm about to impact.
Yes.
And like a good gift giver who understands what they love, what they need, what they want, I'm trying to lead them in a way that they could be most receptive and most grateful for my leadership. My leadership should feel like a gift to that person. So I follow a four-step process.
Yes.
Whenever I see a young person who's not my age and I do not understand what they just did, what I want to do is walk in and correct them. But that's not the right way to go, because that just builds a wall, right? Yes. We're gonna have a wall between us.
Yes.
So the four-step process in English spells a leg, but I don't know what it spells in Espanol. So let me just give you the four.
Give it to us.
The first step is ask. Don't tell, ask.
Yeah.
So I want to go and prepare to ask them questions about, oh, what was the reasoning behind that decision you just made? That was different than what I would have done. Tell me what you were thinking, okay?
Yeah.
So that's very important that we learn to just ask questions. When we ask questions of someone, they feel valued.
Yeah.
Very important for us to make sure they feel valued. The next word is listen well. We've already talked about that.
Yeah.
I listen well, they feel heard. It does very little good to ask questions if we're not willing to listen to what they have to say. So I take a few minutes after I ask and I listen to them. The next step is empathize. This is something I've been having to learn as an older baby boomer. When I empathize, I find myself really listening and then responding with, oh, wow, I had no idea that happened to you. Or, oh my gosh, I bet that made you feel awful when that happened. But I'm letting them know I understand. So ask, they feel heard. Excuse me, ask, they feel valued. Listen, feel heard. Empathize, they feel understood. And that's what they long for, to be understood by other generations. Now I've earned my right to do step four, which is to guide them. That's what I wanted to do from the minute, from the first minute of our conversation.
Yes.
Now I've earned my right to do that. I want to encourage anybody that's listening, whatever your generation, ask, listen, empathize, guide. It's the way to win them at the heart level and build a bridge rather than a wall.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's powerful. This is like a recipe, you know, for adding value, you know, to people and to connect and to understand them.
Yeah.
And to be that, to build those walls, those bridges, to be a bridge, not a wall.
That's
in a practical way. Thank you for all these insights, all this knowledge and wisdom. Yeah. If there is something that you would like or you would love to add, you know, to our audience, you know, to educators, youngest leaders, students, professionals, I don't know.
Yeah, let me close with a very quick story that might be a good action step for others. I remember hearing about an officer in the United States Army. This happened years ago in Iraq, but it was at a time when several countries were sending food and clothing and supplies and blankets over to the people in Iraq that had been displaced. The Taliban had run them out of their own home village, and now they were in a different village.
Yes.
So when the packages arrived in Iraq, Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Hughes was given the challenge of finding a good place to pass them out.
Yes.
And he thought probably the best place to do this would be the local Muslim mosque, because it was a Muslim part of the world. So he went and took an interpreter, a translator, with him, and he went to the local mosque and he asked the cleric, would you be a distribution center? And the cleric said, I sure will, I'll be happy to. So, Cap, picture this in your mind.
Yeah.
Colonel Hughes was walking with his troops. They had a gun on one shoulder and a package on the other. It looked like they were about to bomb the village.
Oh my God. You know,
packages over there often look like this is a bomb and you're about to detonate this thing. So by the time they got about 200 feet away from the mosque, it was surrounded with local people.
Yes.
They had rocks in their hand and sticks in their hand, and they were ready for a street fight. This was not going to go well. But thankfully, Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Hughes was a man with high EQ. He quickly ordered his troops to stop about 100 feet away from the mosque. And then he ordered them to put down their packages and point their guns toward the ground, which made them very vulnerable because they had people in front of them with rocks and sticks.
With rocks, yeah.
And then he instructed his troop to get down on one knee. So now they're on their knees, which is really vulnerable. And then the last thing he said to his troops was, he said, now I want you to look into the faces of these people and I want you to smile. And when those soldiers smiled at the people in front of them, one by one, the people began to smile back. And they began to put down their rocks and their sticks. And this gave Colonel Hughes enough time to find somebody that could translate, to quickly run up and explain, we're not here to harm you, we're here to help you. We have blankets and food and clothes. And the disaster that could have happened that day was averted. It was removed.
Yes.
Now, here's why I tell you that story. I don't think Colonel Hughes learned that on page 57 of the Army manual.
Yes.
I think he was an emotionally intelligent leader. I think he was a social intelligent leader that knew how to read the people before he would lead the people. And I'm saying to everyone listening right now, building bridges is going to require you to read the person in front of you before you lead the person in front of you. Find out who is there and then give them the gift of good leadership. That's what I leave you with today.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
The insights, all the knowledge, all the stories, powerful stories, you know, to really connect with the topic and to learn about good leadership. Thank you very much, you know, for your leadership. Thank you very much. You know, the world needs better leaders.
Yes.
And more leaders like you, you know, with that, a better leadership, you know. So we deserve it. And every person, you know, deserves to be led well, you know.
That's right.
And thank you. Thank you for your energy, for your time, your generosity, you know, to be open, you know, to be here with us, with our great audience. And we are going to wait, you know, for the next book, you know, the future starts with Z.
That's right.
Yeah. But by the time, you know, I just want to recommend, you know, the book on generational diversity, a new kind of diversity. And yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. Great to be with you, Marcos.